Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Damn You Hollywood, weekly, mostly weekly movie review podcast here on the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network. I'm Robert Winfrey. I'm your host for the evening, and I'm prepared to be yelled at about this one. I imagine that's coming, just as a heads up for everybody. Here with me is Mark Rattlesnake, who I'm fortunate, not quite as full of piss and vinegar as usual this evening, so I might get off without... I anticipated kind of a Deadpool scenario here, and I think I'm going to avoid most of that. So, Mark, no protracted introduction this week. I don't have a whole lot to say as far as that goes. So, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I came home at about 7:30 from the Y after I took my daughter to dancing lessons, and I posted the shows, and then I've been napping ever since. So, you know, I've got some energy. I'm okay. I'm ready to talk about this movie such as it is. Tell you what I'm not going to do, though. I'm not going to do the Ghostbusters cultural aspect of this thing. I mean, there's a couple of things I want to say relative to its success and what it does mean. But as far as being like a lot of other reviewers out there, a lot of other media outlets, and elevating this thing to some sort of cultural status that I don't think it deserves, I'm not even entertaining the discussion. I will say, if you liked Wonder Woman and it made you feel good about yourself, I certainly wouldn't take that from anybody. If you as a woman or as a girl saw it and it spoke to you, great. There's nothing for me to comment on. That's a personal thing. But the conversation happening out there about, you know, the further meaning of Wonder Woman to the greater cultural lexicon, please get the fuck a hold of yourselves. but I'm not doing it. I'm not Ghostbustering Wonder Woman, goddammit. We're not doing that tonight. I just want to talk about the damn movie.
Well, we're not doing it yet, at least. We'll see how things go. We could also wind up Ghostbustering it in the sense that I have a different opinion than you, and we wind up yelling about it. So, we'll see.
That would be Age of Extinction again.
No. Age of Extinction, I feel we actually had, like, legitimate proactive discussions about elements of it. Ghostbusters, I was just like, no, this is terrible. Here's why. And you're like, go fuck yourself.
I'm pretty sure that was the podcast. That sounds about right.
All right. Anyway, we'll be talking about Wonder Woman this evening, and I don't know. I mean, I had mixed, you know, feelings when I, you know, heard it was coming out, when I saw elements of it. And look, Warner Brothers and their, you know, DC Extended Universe, they have, like, zero goodwill. I mean, just... And bear in mind, I actually enjoyed Man of Steel. This is one of those things... Mark and I actually had a podcast that you can find in the archives here where we discussed, well, in defense of Man of Steel. We talked about what, you know, what worked, what didn't work, how it could have been improved, the things people got wrong when they were trying to critique it, so on and so forth. But Dawn of Justice was... Jeez. It wasn't good. All right, let's put it that way. On the whole, it wasn't good.
Dawn of Justice had the unenviable task of trying to shove too much shit into the sausage, and it being just an overstuffed, overly complicated mess. But as I said back when it came out, I mean, it's edited poorly, but other than that, I was entertained for the 2 hours and change that it was on the screen. And watching the extended cut of it, where they could actually slow it down some, certainly improved the viewing experience. And the same thing can be said for Suicide Squad, where, you know, it had the unenviable task of, this was too many cooks in the kitchen. Two, they were trying to do too much with not enough material. And then, for some odd reason, a lot of it ended up on the cutting room floor anyway. But
you don't understand. We needed more Jared Leto as the Juggalo.
There was fun to be had if you're into that sort of thing, and there's an entertaining 2 hours captured on film. Dawn of Justice and Suicide Squad were not well-constructed movies.
And you can go back into the archives and listen to Mark and I actually review those films and hear more extended discussions about choices made, both acting and editing, and, you know, how we felt they could have been improved. And I actually disagree with you as far as the extended cut for Dawn of Justice helping it a whole lot. I've seen both. The extended cut does not fix the issues with the movie. It adds a few things that in and of themselves are, in a vacuum, they're fine. But nothing happens in a vacuum. So.
Right.
But yeah, and finally we get this. And Wonder Woman is, I mean, I had not heard half of the, like, production horror stories that Mark had. In so much as, you know, there's issues of writing, there's issues of, you know, the amount of film and it got completely saved by editing, essentially. But, you know, pretty much everybody and their dog loved the movie, or at least gave it a positive review. And I went into this expecting... a solid movie that was essentially unspectacular. And that's basically what I got. And so, and again, this is one of the reasons I was prepared to be yelled at. You see, because again, see our Ghostbusters discussion or our Deadpool discussion, where I'm like, yeah, sure, it's nothing. I mean, fine, whatever. And Mark's like, no, damn it. What's wrong with you? This is great. I'm like, no, it's really not. It's sure, but. And he just get I mean, for every bit he drives me towards aneurysms with, you know, our review segments where I get to yell at critics. I feel like there's at least 3 to 4 movies a year that I am so completely nonplussed by that he is just over the moon about. Like, I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum where I'm like, no, this is terrible. And then we can have a spirited discussion about opposing viewpoints where I just don't care. And he's trying to sell me on, you know, this thing being great. And I imagine every little bit I can get back as far as that goes, I'll take it.
My expectations of Wonder Woman were, yes, it's true, I had seen a video from Midnight something or other on YouTube where basically an angry Warner Brothers executive or employee or whatever had written a letter, and they were saying at the time that Wonder Woman was a mess. I think this was a situation where they shot a lot of footage. They would definitely reshoot, which is not uncommon. And I think the movie was saved in editing. I think this was another situation where they looked at the footage, they sat back, and they're like, okay, we need to construct a decent story out of this. And my expectation was that they would be successful. You know, I wouldn't say that I was skeptical seeing the early fresh ratings on it. You know, of course the paid reviewers were going to be gaga over Wonder Woman, but I think I went in, you know, my expectations were that there wasn't going to be a lot of heavy lifting in terms of world building, that this was going to be a more or less a standalone Wonder Woman film, focusing on that character, their hopes and dreams and struggles and whatnot. And that I think my expectations were that Gal Gadot would hold up her end of the bargain and we would get a fun action-adventure superhero movie. And my expectations were largely met. Though I'm closer to Robert than he realizes, in that, you know, with Guardians, I was very passionate about it. And we talked about that on the podcast, you know, whereas I was very excited about that movie when it was over and defending its merits against people who thought, oh, the first one was better. And we talked at length about it being a character piece and, you know, the value in that and how well it was executed. When Wonder Woman was over, I was happy for the audience members who saw it, self-identified with Wonder Woman, felt like, you know, a blow was, and this I don't agree with, but if they felt this way, I'm not going to take that away from people, but a blow was struck for equality among, you know, men and women in as far as there being heroes captured on film. You know, the Red Letter Media guys made a point of this. They were like, you know, finally, women have someone to look up to besides their moms, Madame Curie, Hillary Clinton, you know. It's like, yeah, all right, we get it. Good point. But I think what a lot of the argument has been is, oh, we don't see enough action-adventure heroines, you know, comic book heroes captured on screen. And again, Mike Soclasa from Red Letter Media made the point of, your source material largely catered to its audience of young boys. So, yeah, there weren't a lot of female superheroes. That's not the audience. They serviced the audience. That has changed, and there's a discussion to be had on a different podcast about how well they've managed to whether or not they're still servicing their main audience of comic buyers and are reflecting, you know, our multicultural society. I think Marvel tries, and I think DC has certainly also added a great deal of focus on their female characters, but I don't know if there's an audience out there for it that still buys comics. And before this goes any further, let me say, before everyone gets all crazy, let us remember, Wonder Woman has been part of a cultural lexicon for decades. She's a very well-known character. This movie, as long as it was good, should do well. But after Wonder Woman and maybe Captain Marvel in 2019, starring Brie Larson, there's not a lot of famous female comic book heroes out there. And it's still hit and miss in terms of female action heroines. This was not the first successful female action heroine on screen. I would point you to Angelina Jolie's Lara Croft, Tomb Raider. Her first movie was very successful. It was successful enough that it got a sequel, and the sequel wasn't as successful. But that's not due to her lack of popularity. That was due to the script being shitty. This is also, you know, and I'm going to conclude my thoughts by saying, before everyone gets all like, see, women on screen, women action heroes on screen, we're equal to men now. This was also the year that Scarlett Johansson's Ghost in the Shell fucking bombed and bombed big time. Let's look at all, you know, the whole context here. Wonder Woman is a step above in terms of notoriety. After that, it's slim pickings. So calm the fuck down, people.
That's good advice generally for humanity nowadays. Just calm down. Right? Seriously. All right. As for the movie itself, your last chance to avoid spoilers, here comes your plot synopsis. We are introduced to Child Diana on the island of Themyscira. We get her backstory. She was carved out of clay and then given life by Zeus. She's a small child, and she wants to learn to fight, darn it. And her mother, the Queen of the Amazons, says, no, we don't want no fighting. We don't want no fussing. This will never happen. There's no need for this. I mean, we're an overly militarized society anyway, so no. I mean, later revelations make this whole thing just the dumbest, I mean, like the dirt dumbest point of contention possible. Yeah, I mean, just seriously. I mean, and no, you're the god killer. But boy, we really don't want you to know how to fight. Okay, how does this work then? I mean, really? Writing staff.
It's an overprotective parent not making a logical decision. It happens.
I know. It's just, again, it's the totality of the circumstance. If Diana was just another Amazon, fine. I'm there 100%. We're good. The direction they took elements of the narrative made this an exercise in just, again, stupidity. Anyway, the Amazonian general, who has a slightly more realistic expectation for Diana's future, does start training her. She becomes an exceptional warrior. On the hidden island of Themyscira, there's some backstory about the nature of the Amazons. Then one day, many years in the future, as Diana's struggling to come to terms with some of her inherent abilities, an airplane crash lands in the oceans outside the island. This is something they've never seen. They've been a completely isolated culture for thousands of years. Which made her bit about, well, we speak all languages somewhat loud. Do you not understand how language changes over time, people? I mean, really? Anyway, sorry, my issues aside. She rescues the pilot, Chris Pine. A bunch of German soldiers show up. There's a fight. Several Amazons die, including said general, who, with her dying breath, encourages Diana to leave the island and go forth and fulfill her destiny. Again, we're pulling straight out of the hero's journey here, folks. Chris Pine informs the Amazons of World War I, which they are completely unaware of. And a scene I got a huge kick out of. Just like, no, I'm fighting in the war. What war? What war? The war! It's been going on for, you know, several years across massive portions of the globe. You know, the war. Anyway, the issue of this particular war is, the Amazons are sworn to fight and oppose Ares, the last remaining Olympian god of war, who's stylized essentially in the Lucifer role for this, as tempting and corrupting men into committing various heinous acts and, you know, all the bad things. It's Ares. He's the one. Diana defies her mother, absconds with all the Wonder Woman garb, you know, the armor, the lasso, shield, the sword, and heads off with Chris Pine to try and kill Ares and end conflict as mankind knows it. And I believe she actually says something to that effect at one point. And thankfully, this movie doesn't... I want to talk about that later. We're also around this time introduced to a German general, whose name is not worth remembering, and a, I believe, French scientist, who is working on adaptations for mustard gas to so that it will actually eat through gas mask material and, you know, it's war. Working on, you're perfecting the weapon here. You're building a better mousetrap. This is the waning bit of World War One in theory. So there's treaty negotiations going on. Chris Pine, again, plays Captain Steve Trevor. Steve Trevor. I remembered. It took me a minute. He was able to steal some of the chemical formulas and notes from this French doctor, I believe Moreau. I'm just going with Moreau. Which, as I say, it makes me dearly wish that instead of, you know, this young woman with, you know, porcelain facial prosthetics, we had actually had Marlon Brando. Just for the hilarity.
Yeah. Doctor, why are you working on the formula? You never do nothing for the family.
Anyway, they head out. They arrive in London. There's, again, talks of armistice and peace treaties, and they don't want the delicate balance upset. So, you know, Chris Pine showing up with, guys, there's a problem here. And we're like, no, we want peace, damn it. This was a terrible war. We just want it to end. Which is, incidentally, the same mentality that would give rise, that would help give rise to Adolf Hitler, you know, 20 years later. Give or take. Guys, I'm taking this. Well, we don't want war, so go ahead and have it. Hey, I'm taking this, too. Well, we really don't want actual conflict, so yeah, go ahead and take that. I'm taking this. Repeat ad nauseum. That's not a joke. The appeasement philosophy essentially laid out the red carpet for Hitler's nationalism and expansion, setting up, you know, World War II.
Go ahead and just read Paris 1919, everybody, okay? Go find it in your local bookstore. Paris 1919 explains the whole Paris Treaty and basically how we fucked Germany 8 ways from Sunday and inevitably caused World War II.
I mean, honestly, there's a perfectly valid argument that the notion of World War I and World War II is a more American concept. In Europe, they were much more closely linked, both you know, cause and effect and in terms of timeline. And if you're European, there's a much more valid argument that those are essentially one continuous conflict with a minor lull.
Well,
but America took longer to get in on both instances. So anyway, point being,
If you think about Germany, you have a dozen or so countries all doing the same thing, all fighting each other. Germany happens to be on the losing side, but was doing the exact same thing as the winners. And then with the Paris Treaty of 1919, was still given the bill for the war. And Germany was basically, what the fuck? We didn't do anything. That you all didn't do. And they all went, yeah, but you lost. And then we wonder why Germany was angry.
Yeah. There's an actual interesting history that this movie kind of glosses over, which kind of annoyed me. But it's the sad thing about being a student of history.
No one was there for a history lesson.
I know. It's just, again, Anyway, Steve decides, nuts to this. I'm not letting this terrible, terrible new form of mustard gas that's based in hydrogen, which is really kind of the dumbest thing they could. Sorry, not a chemistry lesson. I'll do that in a minute. So he sets off with Diana and a few guys he picks up along the way, and we're gonna do something about this. We're gonna find their production, we're gonna shut it down. Diana's still all, I want Ares. You promised to take me to Ares, and Steve, like half the time, is just, you can practically see him stop from rolling his eyes. No, Anyway, they wind up on part of the Western Front in Germany, or excuse me, in France, Belgium, I think they mentioned specifically. And Diana gets her first, like, actual bit of taste of real war. And World War One was very ugly. It gets forgotten constantly. But that was an exceptionally brutal conflict. And she's a little bit shocked by this and decides, you know, I've had all I can stand. I can't stand no more. Sets out in a charge across no man's, across this specific stretch of no man's land. Leads a charge that breaks part of the ranks through into this particular town, which I have to imagine was then immediately retaken because now your line is grossly out of proportion with this, and that whole battalion is now in danger of being cut off, surrounded, and annihilated. But, you know,
or
I only
you
know.
Just continue to the, or you can continue the plot synopsis of the movie.
So as they hang out in this town, again, Steve and Diana become closer. She gets to see a little bit more about, she's learning this whole time about some of the complexities of human nature. And that, you know, things aren't necessarily as cut and dry as she was led to believe in her, you know, sheltered little cult house island. They discover a diplomatic meeting of the German high command, and Diana's become convinced that this German general is actually Ares, and I'm going to show up and I'm going to kill him. And Steve's like, you can't go to a diplomatic meeting and just murder a member of the German high command. This is not how the world operates. And she goes, shut up. I'm a strong, independent woman who doesn't need no man.
I'll murder anybody I want to murder.
They come into conflict because he's trying to figure out the location of their production for this, again, terrible new gas. And she's like, no, no, I'm going to kill this guy. Again, they test out the gas on the nearby village that they just saved. Diana is righteously pissed because she could have stopped it. No, no. They were going to set that off anyway, but go ahead and have your guilt complex there. This eventually leads to a bit of a conflict where she kills the German general, who is not actually Ares, and looks around and sees the people are still fighting and goes, but I killed him. His corrupting influence should be gone. Why are you still fighting? At which point Steve has to again kind of go, you know, some people are just, they're just not good people in the world. And
some men you just can't reach. So you do what we had here last week, which is the way he wants it. Well, he gets it. I don't like it any more than you do.
Again, you stand up for what you believe in, and that's just how you have to go about life, because you're never going to save everybody. It's just not feasible. The actual Ares is revealed to be David Thewlis, who I actually like as an actor, who was introduced earlier as a British diplomat, while Trevor and his merry band try to stop, again, this release of gas in an entirely too futuristic airplane that actually wouldn't function under the technology and parameters of the time. But again, I know too much. Look, contemporary movies punish you for thinking, all right? That's all I'm saying. Diana confronts Ares, who says, you know, I didn't do anything. All right? No, you're this corrupting influence. I told him maybe how to build a better bomb. But I never made them use it. I never pushed the button. I never incited anything. They're doing this all on their own. All I ever wanted was for these terrible, terrible people, this infestation, to be eradicated so we can all go back to being happy. Which is a tremendous bit of character that, sadly, is just completely wasted. Diana decides, no, I have been trained since birth to kill Ares. We're going to have it out. She realizes it's not the sword she carries that's going to kill him. It's her. She's the weapon. Protracted fight scene while, I guess, Steve and his merry band are able to infiltrate the airplane. Steve takes off and destroys it over the head because it's hydrogen-based. Do you people have any idea how unstable and combustible hydrogen is? Hang on.
No.
Hang on. No. It's important because they actually do bring it up. Because they're trying to figure out how they're going to get rid of this. All these bombs are on timers. If they fly too, they can't leave it here. It'll still go off and wreak terrible havoc all around them. And well, is it flammable? Well, it's hydrogen-based. So, yeah, it's flammable. So he flies it up high enough into the atmosphere and shoots it, causing the whole thing to blow up. Heroic sacrifice. And incidentally, why you would never use a hydrogen base for a mustard gas, because any idiot with a match is just going to ignite it, which would suck, but is also going to prevent the long-term effects that you're looking for with mustard gas. It defeats the purpose if we can, you know, stop the spreading of the gas with any minor bit of spark. But again, I know too much. Diana is understandably distressed about this. She finds her inner strength while being tempted to destroy all of humanity because they're terrible people. She finds faith in, you know, love and human goodness, kills Ares. Everyone in the immediate vicinity automatically stops fighting, which made me want to vomit. Because you literally are just contradicting a point you just made. War ends.
Very much agree
with
that.
Hiding, and then emerges many years. I have complaints about this bit of writing, by the way. The whole thing is framed as a flashback for her. In the beginning, she's working in the Louvre and gets a message from Bruce Wayne, who has found the original picture that he used to identify her in Dawn of Justice. So it's all her memory, and we get a bit of her monologue at the beginning and end. And at the end, she just kind of reaffirms that, you know, you're never going to save everybody, not as a hero. You're never going to, you know, punch all the bad guys into submission. You have to shift the paradigm of humanity to be more love and tolerance-based than ignorance and hate-based, which is absolutely true, and that she's going to continue fighting. All right. Mark, do you want to do your bit first, because I know, again, you have a lot of good things to say about this movie. I have a few good things to say. Again, I've talked enough. Go ahead. Where do you want to start, as I tend to say every week here? Yay for catchphrases. So where do you want to start?
I actually don't have a whole lot to say about the movie. From a craft, obviously I enjoyed it a lot. My only real criticism is the ending is a little, the ending fight with Ares was made to feel epic, but it actually feels drawn out and way too long. It needed tightening up. I get why it's there. I get the audience members that they're trying to service by giving an epic fight scene with Ares. I mean, Wonder Woman and Ares in the comic book were, you know, were arch enemies, and you know, you wanna make sure that there's that comic book element to it, so that people come away satisfied. I mean, when you look at the actual action sequences of Wonder Woman, there's the invasion of the beach in Themyscira, which isn't really focused on Wonder Woman. There's her one big fight scene where she crosses the trenches and allows the army to take the village. And it's awesome. It's the highlight of the movie in terms of action. But then again, there's nothing until she fights Ares at the end. So I understand the need to satisfy those that were looking for an action film here. You don't want just talking, but it still went a little too long. And it needed some reshaping. Other than that, I really enjoyed Gal Gadot's portrayal of Wonder Woman as this naive woman who has a very black and white worldview and is slowly not, I wouldn't use the word corrupted, but is slowly shown that the world is more gray than I think she's comfortable with. And, you know, the Wonder Woman that we met in Dawn of Justice and at the beginning of this movie is the end result of her experiences in this war and the realization that things are not always as simple as one would like them to be. And I thought Gal Gadot did a very good job of portraying that arc. Patty Jenkins' direction in terms of being an actor's director was phenomenal. I point to the scene on the boat between Diana and Steve where they're talking about quote-unquote pleasures of the flesh. There was so much sexual tension in that scene without there being any sex at all. And I thought that was phenomenal. And there's a lot of that in this movie in terms of using dialogue and space and themes to create tension in the scene without banging you over the head. So I have to say, you know, everyone really does a phenomenal job of that. Chris Pine is Steve Trevor. You know, being sort of Diana's guide through, her being a fish out of water. I thought he really rode that line between, you know, your typical male in a movie like this and giving her enough space to be the star of her own movie. Plus, I just thought his portrayal of Steve Trevor was spot on. You know, as somebody who, again, is driven by his agenda, you know, he wants to stop the war. He's a soldier. He's a spy. And his decisions are based on his belief that this war is wicked and needs to come to an end, and he needs to help it come to an end. But all that was good. The movie, I thought the movie looked good. It's hard, you know, I mean, people commented about, oh, it's yet another Zack Snyder, drab, gray, awful. It was in London in the middle of a war.
Yeah, I don't think that's a fair. I mean, to say that just ignores the entire setup of the movie where they're in a brightly lit paradise.
Yeah, I was about to say that Themyscira looks gorgeous. So, and the contrast I thought looked very good on screen. And they do address it. They're here we are in jolly old England. It's like, oh, it looks hideous. He's like, yeah, it's not for everybody. Yeah, you know, it looked like it should have in that time period.
Yeah.
I thought that the woman who plays Dr. Poison did a great job with her character. The dude who plays Ares, I thought, you know, in terms of being the whispering devil and not being over the top, I thought he did. I thought his performance was spot on. So I didn't. There are critics out there who don't think Gal Gadot emotes very well, and I actually disagree with that. I thought that in terms of capturing the spirit of somebody who sees the world a very, very specific way and then has internal struggles as she's introduced to all these different elements, I thought, you know, she acted with her face. I thought it came through very well. I really enjoyed the action set piece in the trenches. I didn't necessarily enjoy the fight scene with Ares. There were elements of it that I did like. I loved when she set the tank over Dr. Poison and she realizes that, you know, this is not the way. You know, fighting and anger and hatred, these things are not working. This is getting Ares exactly what he wants. Sparing this woman's life and showing compassion and love, that's the way to win the war. And it's demonstrated by her throwing the tank away. I'm like, okay, that was great. There are half a dozen great little scenes in this movie, quiet scenes that really, you know, make the sum total of the movie an excellent watch. That's really all. I mean, I do want to address what you said before about, you know, they've gone through this entire sequence of people are going to fight. You know, this is more than just one guy, and then she kills Ares, and then everyone does stop fighting. And here's what I'm going to tell you. I think the reason why I was able to, because I, like you, I watched that and I went, wait a minute, this is now contradicting the point she just made. And then I was like, you know what, though? They just spent all night fighting, and there isn't anything to fight over anymore. And I think everyone's just happy to be alive and get through it. And so I don't think they were stopping, obviously, because of the death of Ares. I think they were stopping because people were just tired of fighting. And I'm okay with that.
And had they, I think there's a better way to frame that whole sequence visually to kind of get that point across. If instead of everyone smiling and backslapping, like the guys who were enemies smiling and backslapping, you have, you know, the remainder of that band on one side and the remainder of the, you know, the Germans on the other, and they both look at this giant crater and then just kind of look at each other and go, and what are we doing at this, you know, what are we doing right now? Kind of wave and walk away. I mean, again, I think there's a better way to make that point than the way they did in this particular instance.
That's really it. That's all I have to say. I think comparisons to other movies, other action movies by women are a little unfair. I mean, why would you compare this to Catwoman or Elektra? But you know,
the vague attempt to try and make a connection between a female-led superhero movie and another female-led superhero movie, because anyone with half a brain knows there's absolutely no connectivity. Look at the totality of the situation.
But you know, it was good. It was absolutely good. It was absolutely a good movie. I was happy to have sat through it at the end. I actually stayed through the entire credits, and you know, I hope people had a good time with it. It's obviously
Was there a post-credit scene?
Very successful. There was not.
Okay.
Let me say that. I'm glad that this movie could just stand on its own and, you know, there was obviously a connection to the world, you know, in that Batman sends her the picture and all of that, but it largely stood on its own and was its own movie. And if you don't know anything else about the DCEU, it doesn't matter. This was its own separate standalone story. So good job. I would give it an A. Other than the ending and some minor gripes here or there, it's pretty flawless.
All right. Here's where Mark starts yelling at me. Okay. First of all, I agree about the acting in this movie. Saying Gal Gadot struggles to emote is to not fully understand the character she's portraying. She's portraying a character with stunted emotional growth. We yelled at critics about this when it came to Iron Fist for the same reason. Like, oh, all he does is, you know, talk about, you know, being a badass and wanting to fight the hand. That's how he's been raised. That is literally his only point of connectivity and connection with the world, apart from people he hasn't seen in 30 years, right? No, the acting's bad. He's acting as an emotionally stunted human being who struggles to emote properly. No, I think he does, again, great job portraying that. Same thing here. This is a character struggling with reality. And making that, and that's a rough struggle. So, again, I disagree with that. And Gal Gadot's fine. I have no major complaints with her performance. Chris Pine is fine. It's nice to see him actually get to act again, because if all you know of him is, you know, some of the other blockbusters he's been in, where, let's face it, there's not a whole lot of acting that he does. Depth of acting. Let me rephrase. There's not a ton of depth to his acting in, you know, Star Trek. Or, you know, Speed with Trains, things like that. But Chris Pine can act. And if you don't believe me, you have evidence here. And I have also feel free to find Hell or High Water, which really was shocking to me watching him, again, act in that movie, because it was tremendous. So it's nice to see him get a chance to act. The action in this movie is the weakest part. In no small measure, because I imagine there's a corporate mandate that all action sequences must, in flow and execution, resemble Zack Snyder's visual style, which robs them of any individuality and fills us with static shots into mediocre CGI, into slowdowns, into, again, if you've seen a Zack Snyder movie, the action all bears a striking similarity. And you get that here, which is a terrible shame. Again, the set piece where they take the town of Veld, the bit where she tries to cross the no man's land between the trenches is fine. Once they get into the city, they lost me completely. there's a handful of scenes with Chris Pine on a motorbike that are just obviously CGI'd. And all of that, you know, again, and I know how this works, like, from a production standpoint. You're in front of a green screen, you go into the hero shot, you cut, and then in post-production, you superimpose all of these visual effects. Unfortunately, it's just obvious. I mean, not all of the visual effects in this movie are bad. There's a handful that are, I found, cringeworthy. A couple of her sequences with the lasso of truth, using it as a weapon, I just kind of went, ugh. But on the whole, they're okay. The final battle with Ares, I completely agree with Mark. It drags. And it drags because they don't give... If you intersperse her, you know, epic fight with Ares with, you know, Steve Trevor and that group actually doing something interesting, you have a better... The flow is different. It doesn't feel as monotonous as Diana versus Ares did. If you, again, you just give them something to do that is different. It's one of the reasons, you know, certain entries into the Star Wars franchise, you're cutting between three different action sequences, say at the end of Return of the Jedi. You've got Luke and Vader's lightsaber duel, you've got the space battle, and you've got the ground battle on Endor. And it doesn't drag because they shift appropriately between different styles of action sequences to keep you interested instead of being boring. And here we get a lot of the same, with the occasional cut to remind you that, oh, we're setting up Steve's heroic sacrifice, please feel sad. Here's the major thing I would have done. There's a couple of things I would have done differently. Here's the major one, and this one has to do with her closing epilogue. There's still a massive disconnect between Wonder Woman at the end of this and at the end of her backstory and Wonder Woman at the start of Dawn of Justice. And I think you need something, and I know they're trying to set up a sequel, which I hate in the sense that, yay, sequels, but I get in the sense that, I mean, what are we doing here? We're making money, right? So I get it. But I almost feel like there needed to be a reiteration of, again, that point that, no, people kind of suck. And there's a real easy way to do it, too. During that final bit where, you know, they're celebrating the end of the war, you could even have her reference again, maybe still a bit of being naive in the sense that I thought, you know, okay, people are still going to fight, but I did actually kill Ares. So maybe, you know, not an end to conflict, but maybe an end to, you know, massive war. And then again, 20 years later, without the influence of essentially the devil, we see depths of depravity and inhumanity that even Ares probably could only dream of. And again, you use that as her, just as kind of the breaking point that sets up her reclusiveness that we see. And again, you can do it without blatantly sequel baiting while also setting up that, no, there's still a journey here. She's not yet a finished product.
Well, I think part of where she is at the end of the movie is her heart was broken. And that's part of what's driving her into isolation, is that at by the end of the movie, whether it's love or it's a deep affection, you know, she's sad at the loss of Steve. and I think that's driving her a lot of her decision making at the end of the war. So that's why I didn't have a major problem with the way that it ended.
It wasn't bad. And bear in mind, you know, like other movies that have ended and you just kind of like facepalm really, really hard. It wasn't that bad. It just, I felt it could have been done, again, I like my idea there, and I feel that they could have done it in a, again, you can set up a sequel without slapping a to be continued on it. And I think they could have done that a little bit better. Some of the visual effects. Again, I know Mark liked the action. I found the action to be the least interesting portions of this movie, just straight up. Which is fine in the sense that the movie isn't carried by the action. This movie is carried by the acting and by the relationships between characters. Again, Mark said, you know, there's half a, you know, there's half a dozen, maybe even a full dozen individual scenes in this film that are genuinely, you know, good to great. And it's,
there were little nods of the comic, you know, the ice cream bit, you know, the animated movie, she yells out, "I love ice cream." And this, you know, in the comic book and in the movie, she's like, "Oh, you must be very proud." You know, it was little things like that made the movie really enjoyable for me.
Yeah. There's a really nice attention to detail within the movie's own universe. Again, I know entirely too much. And Hollywood punishes you for being smart these days. So, again, my reaction coming out of this movie was, I got what I expected. There's, again, things I think could have absolutely been improved upon, but there's no major... There's no, like, glaring issues of technique or craft. There's a handful of really, again, boneheaded bits of narrative arc that I just, in full retrospect, it's like, really? We wasted time on this when, you know, we were going to wind up at this point anyway. But again, on the whole, it's a perfectly serviceable movie. I have no, again, minor errors, no major ones. And, I mean, I wouldn't give it an A like Mark, but solid B+.
Before we do the next thing, we have a caller here. I'm going to go ahead and screen him, so just if you could just talk a little bit longer.
Oh, you mean I have to listen to the sound of my own voice? Oh, joy. Sorry. I listen to these back every now and then, and I really, like, I don't mind the sound of myself when I'm talking, as I'm sure you can all tell. Listening to it back, I cringe, and I cringe, and I cringe, and I cringe. Okay, while Mark's doing that... let me think. I could swear I had another... Wait, I did have another point. No, I actually covered that one. Crap. Well, filling airtime is always a fun exercise.
All right, we actually have a caller here who has a question about the movie and is relative to, you know, our actual subject matter tonight. So, area code 516. What's your name again?
My name is Jesse, man. How you guys? I've called in the show before.
Yeah, I recognize you. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
What's your question?
Is this movie better than I forget the name of it, and I was telling him on the screen call, and he didn't want to tell me. the one where Captain America and Spider-Man faced off with Iron Man.
Is it better than Civil War?
Captain America Civil War. And
well,
by the way, that was a horrible naming for that movie.
Well,
it should have been called like
the same name. It was
Oh, okay.
There was a comic. Yeah, there was a comic book series where there was an issue, and Iron Man had one side of the issues, Captain America had the other side. Heroes joined both sides, and they ended up fighting and killing some of each other, and it was called Civil War. Was it okay? So was Wonder Woman better than Civil War? a bit of a hard comparison, but I'm going to go ahead and give a soft yes. Wonder Woman was better than Civil War.
Wow.
Wonder Woman structurally at the end doesn't go off a cliff, and characters don't start doing crazy things that are out of character for them, which was my major problem with the ending of Civil War. I jokingly said to Robert about it. I said, if the movie ends at the airport scene, it's nearly flawless, and there isn't a huge problem there. But you know, we've also talked in the past about how even the introduction to the central issue by Thunderbolt Ross and everyone's reaction to him seems entirely out of place, given that half of the problems were caused by Tony. And Tony alone. And that's not recognized in the film. So there were structural elements that were a problem with Civil War. There were plot elements, character elements that were a little wonky. And Wonder Woman's a lot more straightforward than all of that. They're also very different movies. Robert, you want to weigh in here?
Is it better? It's tough. In some ways, yes. In some ways, again, I sound so wishy-washy. No, but it's close. I don't think it's better, but it's that's actually very close as far as, you know, again, one-to-one comparisons go. So
okay.
Yeah, I mean, again, I was okay with elements of the ending of Civil War that you weren't in real time. I just took issue with the portrayals of how they got there more than the destination in a lot of respects. And feel free to go back and listen to Mark and I review Captain America Civil War, and you can get the full details as to each side of our argument there.
There's also a previous on trial where Sean and I went off topic and started talking about Civil War, and I softened my stance a little bit. All right. With that said, I think our review proper is done. Let's talk about the money.
Here comes the money.
Here we go. Money talk.
Here comes the money.
All right. No surprise here. Wonder Woman won the weekend. On a $150 million budget, I'm rounding up, it's currently sitting at a worldwide cum of $240 million. Its weekend total for June 2nd through June 4th was $103. That's very, very good. It was obviously the number one movie of the weekend. It debuted at number one. Debuting at number two was Captain Underpants, which brought in $23 million. Pirates of the Caribbean had a 64% drop.
Yeesh.
from where it was.
That's
number one to number three.
That's hard. That's real harsh.
It brought in $22 million. Guardians dropped from number two to four. It brought in about $10 million. Baywatch dropped from three to five. It brought in about 8.7. Alien Covenant, 4 to 6, 4.1. Everything, 5 to 7, 3.3. Snatch, 7 to 8, brought in about $1 million. Diary of a Wimpy Kid dropped from 6 to 9. That also brought in a little over $1 million. And lastly, King Arthur dropped from 8 to 10. It brought in about $1 million and change. Real quick, Beauty and the Beast stayed at number 11. It brought in $658,000. And Boss Baby dropped out of the top 10 finally. It went from number 9 to number 12. But I'll tell you, Boss Baby's still kicking ass and taking names. Its worldwide standing right now is number 7. Between Get Out and Kong Skull Island. Obviously, the number one... Oh, this is domestic. Hang on. I want the one worldwide. Damn it.
It's Beauty and the Beast, followed by Fate of the Furious.
Yes, well, Beauty and the Beast and Fate of the Furious are still 1 and 2, both over $1 billion. And Guardians at number 3 at $818 million. Logan at number 4 at 612. Kong Skull Island, 565. Pirates settling in at 510. And The Boss Baby is the number 7 movie in the world at $483 million. Good for Fox. Rounding out the top 10 are 50 Shades Darker, Your Name, and Triple X Return of Xander Cage. Wonder Woman currently sits at number 18 between Journey to the West, The Demon Strike Back, which is a Sony picture, and A Dog's Purpose. Alien Covenant, by the way, worldwide, sitting at $174 million, just above Ghost in the Shell, but just behind Smurfs, The Lost Village. Not good.
This is partially why we can't have nice things, guys.
So, Wonder Woman broke all kinds of records. Patty Jenkins should be applauded for, you know, her efforts being a female director. And I give credit where credit's due. I'm not going to knock Wonder Woman or Patty Jenkins. You know, they had the task of bringing Wonder Woman to the big screen and making it be successful, and they were successful. The question becomes, does Wonder Woman shoot to a billion, or will it settle in around 8 or 9, 6 or 7? I'm going to look it up now, but I'm fairly certain Suicide Squad settled in at about 800 million. And
this opens soft to Suicide Squad.
I would tell you that I don't think Wonder Woman makes $1 billion. I think it settles in. Okay, so Suicide Squad, yeah, actually it didn't make 800 million, it made 745. I would say Wonder Woman probably gets to, for its entire run, it gets into the 800 millions and probably stalls out there. I mean, if it makes a billion, great, good for Warner Brothers, but I just don't see it happening. It's got, you know, in terms of the audience, you know, obviously it has a large portion of comic book fans and adult women, but it's largely also dependent on children, and they've got Cars and Despicable Me and Spider-Man coming up in the next few weeks. Though I will tell you, it'll probably still be the number one movie in the world next weekend because it'll do better than The Mummy. I think The Mummy opens soft. I don't think The Mummy does as well.
And, I hope it bombs.
You know, it ends up being... Oh, so do I. It's certainly starting to look that way. But I think Wonder Woman retained its number one position, and The Mummy comes in at number two. So, anything else you want to talk about as far as money?
Real briefly, because we brought up The Mummy. Dear Universal, stop it. You saw everyone else was making, you know, big franchises and interconnected universes, and you tried to jump on the bandwagon with all these classic monster characters. And I think all of those movies have not done well. You had the Wolfman remake, which isn't actually part of this, but should have been an indicator that the appetite for that is not necessarily there. Dracula Untold kind of bombed and kind of sucked. I, Frankenstein bombed and sucked. And yet you just are throwing piles of money after this terrible idea. I mean, seriously, how much more money are you going to have to lose before you realize this is not a good idea?
I think if they had sat down and really planned it out, a Universal horror movie monster connected universe wasn't the worst idea I've ever heard. The problem is you have the same problem here as you have with the DC Cinematic Universe, which is they rush to get these movies out there, and you know they rush to create a cinematic universe using movies that shouldn't have been a part of it in the first place, like Dracula Untold. And there's no roadmap. And again, we've talked about this before, but it bears repeating. Marvel's Interconnected Universe had a roadmap first. They knew what movies they were going to make. They knew what the end game was going to be, Thanos and the Infinity Gauntlet. And it was just a matter of working towards that. And even with some bumps in the road, like, you know, Ant-Man and the introduction of Spider-Man and all of that, they were still able to stay mostly on the road to where they wanted to go. And without that roadmap, you're, no matter how good or how bad these movies are, you're, the universe is going to suffer. And this just seems like they threw shit at the wall and hoped it would stick.
Yeah, as for Wonder Woman, I hope it makes more money than Suicide Squad, because it's a better movie on every level. And I would just like to see that rewarded once.
I would be okay with that. I'll be okay if it makes over $1 billion. I think, you know, Warner Brothers deserves credit where credit's due, and, you know, they deserve a big win. But if Dawn of Justice didn't crack $1 billion, I don't think this does either, even though it's a better movie.
I'm not entirely sold on Justice League cracking $1 billion.
Well, that's going through reshoots right now, so we'll have to see what the trailers look like post-reshoots. All right, are you ready?
They're just gonna re-release the same trailer where Cyborg looks like crap, Jason Momoa spouts some mediocre one-liners, and we look at overblown, saturated alteration of point of view action sequences that alternate between slightly normal than slightly faster than normal speed and really slow motion, without the vaguest hint of what's actually going on in your movie.
Are you
so
ready?
If you couldn't quite tell, I'm not exactly thrilled about that upcoming movie. So, anyway, Mark, I believe you had a question.
Are you ready?
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
All right, there weren't a lot of rotten reviews, but there were quite a few, and these are many of them are a bit laughable. Camilla Long of the Sunday Times UK, an elegant but intellectually timid film.
What? No. A sheltered individual dealing with the, you know, complexities and realities of, you know, how life operates, dealing with the horrors of war, things you've been told about, and having to realize that your worldview was horribly, horribly skewed. No. That's not actually anything of interest.
John Liu of the Straits Times in Singapore. This picture tries so hard to avoid making a statement that it becomes the elephant in the room.
Did you recently lose your eyesight and you're trying to read subtext in Braille? I mean, what do you think? Hang on. This movie doesn't make statements. You mean, you know, like when Steve Trevor frequently says things like, you know, there's only two things you can do when you see something bad happening in the world. You can do nothing or you can do something. And I've already tried nothing. No, that's not a statement.
Well, I don't think these reviewers, the ones that gave it negative reviews, were actually watching the movie. Jeff Beck of The Blue Spot, you're going to love this. Wonder Woman may be a step in the right direction when it comes to getting the DCEU on track, but it still falters in too many places to get itself up to an acceptable level.
No. I mean, look, even if all we do is compare this to the other DCEU movies, it's the best. I mean, hands down... by a significant margin. And again, I like Man of Steel. I can defend Man of Steel. I've rewatched it. But this is the best movie in that franchise, even if we're limiting the scope of our discussion to just those movies. Yeah, there's issues. I laid them out. Mark laid out a few of them. It's not perfect. But it's a darn sight better than the average major action blockbuster this year, betting that statement's going to hold true as, you know, time goes on. I'd bet you right now this is an exponentially better movie than Transformers.
Yeah, to call it unacceptable, I think, I'm not entirely sure what are you comparing it to. Stephen Romay of The Australian, it's disappointing because Wonder Woman deserves better. I tried to, I don't know what this person means by better. I don't know what they were looking for, and I tried to read the entire article. You have to become a subscriber to The Australian, and that's not happening. But again, better than what exactly, or what was the failure of this that you feel like it didn't live up to Wonder Woman's expectations? I don't get it.
I mean, first of all, some of this comes to, you know, what do you think it deserved? I mean, do you think Wonder Woman is going to, you know, Diana Prince is going to take a place alongside Michael Corleone or Daniel Plainview in the pantheon of great cinematic characters? Are you looking for a movie that, you know, blends genres and achieves soaring new cinematic heights for action films? Come on.
Vincent Mancini, a film drunk. Wonder Woman is a positive symbol, but the ideology of the movie itself is fuzzy and somewhat disappointing. All right.
Again, I really have to question one's ability to read. Okay, not even subtext. Again, we're not talking about subtleties here. There is actual spoken dialogue. So if you're not even paying attention to the actors or the spacing or the visual cues, if you're actually looking at your phone during this and you miss, again, the stuff that takes place visually to help drive the narrative, there's dialogue that you somehow missed as well. I mean, again, there are criticisms to be made about this movie. I don't think any of them bring it down from, you know, a pass to a fail. But come on. It's morally fuzzy. Really? Really?
I get the feeling this person didn't like the war aspect of the movie. Nigel Andrews of the Financial Times. A torpid, overlong DC Comics epic, but the First World War on a baking tray for the latest cook till crisp superhero flick. This person doesn't like their job.
I get that sense. No, I appreciate that they said it in World War I rather than World War II. I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. Again, I mentioned I tend to feel that one gets forgotten when we discuss world history. And even in many senses, when we discuss, you know, technological advancements, I mean, there's all kinds of great and interesting stuff that happened in World War I across multiple fronts. And I appreciated, you know, giving that a little bit of shine. I am so grateful that they didn't try to shove the narrative of, you know, Ares influencing Hitler. Because you couldn't have avoided it if you'd gone with two. And
you are going to love this next one.
Hang on, I got one more thing to say to this particular guy. I mean, they didn't make any bones about the setting, and they used it to pretty good effect. Again, there's elements of it that I found, you know, that I take some issue with in terms of accuracy, but at the same time, we're making a blockbuster movie that, you know, there's only so much actual horror of war that you're going to throw into a PG-13 movie that you want people to take little girls to see. I mean, there is a limit here.
Funny you should mention that. Tony Medley of the Tulip and Times. Unlike most silly fantasy superhero movies, this one is not set in a fictional locale with fictional characters. No, it's Wonder Woman winning World War I. It is the same intellectual diarrhea of all the others, only worse, minimizing the horrors of World War I. Did he miss the entire trench scene where they said these people have been here for months and they've only, you know, for a year and have only gained an inch, and that if you try to run out there and change things, you're going to get cut down? Did he miss that entire speech?
Probably. I mean, again, look, there's elements of minimization that have to happen if you're making a broad, appealing movie. I could have done with a sequence where they did try to close distance and you watch a bunch of people get mowed down that more inspires Diana to do it, but that's just me, and that's fine. More importantly, Wonder Woman doesn't win the war. I mean, This is expressly stated. There's other things going, and maybe they could have done a better job with this point, and I'd agree with that. But you have a soldier who is desperately trying to stop this, you know, weapon of mass destruction from getting out and potentially prolonging things. Wonder Woman does not actually win the war. She defeats another mythical god. Has very little to do with how history transpires. And unless you leveled the same complaint about Captain America punching Hitler in the face, you have not a leg to stand on, sir.
Our good friend Leonard Maltin of LeonardMaltin.com. The only wonder regarding this movie is that it could be so incredibly dull. I keep hoping DC will find a key to unlock the magic inherent in this great cast of characters. Please retire, Mr. Maltin.
This is not a dull movie. I mean, again, there are different cuts that I think you and I both would have made as far as, you know, editing, and 2.5 hours is a not insignificant stretch of time. That's all fair, but there's stuff happening of interest and of import.
Well,
I mean,
I'm
again,
wondering if his problem is things like the boat scene or the village scene after they've taken the village, you know, and again, her and Steve have a slow moment between them, and oh no, please, you know, don't let there be dialogue or character building.
I mean, you could have trimmed the scene where she goes clothes shopping. Okay, I'll give you that. Again, trim,
yeah.
Not cut completely, because there's some humor that's to be had there, and that's important. Again, you could have trimmed that, maybe. But on the whole, you know, just because a movie, I mean, when this guy complains about Transformers not having a quiet moment, we need to refer back to this and say, you're an idiot. Here's an action movie with quiet moments to actually contemplate. You got something that, by all indicator of your previous work, isn't boring, and now you're just complaining about it to complain. Unless, of course, he gives it a positive review, in which case, well, hey, he positively reviewed a Transformers movie. That really should be all the shot to his credibility that you need.
Luke Buckmaster of the Daily Review. The hero faces off against a seemingly insurmountable bad guy from Central Casting, throwing around what appears to be a range of fluorescent Photoshop-generated squiggly lines.
Yeah, the design of Ares could have maybe been a little bit better, but at the same time, David Thewlis is not a physically imposing person. So if you want to have that final confrontation be physical in that respect, hulking him out to that degree makes sense. And yeah, again, there's a couple of scenes where she uses the lasso as a weapon that I just, like, no, that were not good.
All right, that was the last one that was worth reading. Everything else is a fresh review. And I mostly agreed with, you know, I will say this. I was looking for the kind of Ghostbuster-y reviews where people were saying, oh, this movie is great, just, you know, because they don't want to knock it out.
Blatantly ignoring the problems and misrepresenting it.
Yeah. And there's definitely some gushing ones in here that are just like, all right. Take it easy. But I, you know, for the most part, I thought the fresh reviews were more or less on the money. Like I said, some gushing, but for the most part, accurate. So I think that's where we're going to call it tonight.
Sounds good. All you people, demand better of your reviewers. Incidentally, a minor note here. To all the Hollywood executives complaining about Rotten Tomatoes killing your business, Rotten Tomatoes accumulates and presents data. That's the sum total of what they do. If you don't like the fact that your movies are getting terrible reviews, and that maybe people are now realizing a preponderance of others dislike them, so maybe I won't waste my time, there's a real simple solution to this for all you people out there. So I want you to pay attention because I'm going to say it just once. Make better movies. Baywatch did not bomb because Rotten Tomatoes, as an aggregate, assigned it a negative score. Baywatch bombed because you misread the audience, you misread the source material, and you tried to cram a hard R comedy into something that... Again, who thought this was a good idea? Baywatch movie, maybe I can see why you'd think that's a good idea. But every decision, and you notice that everyone who complains about this, it's movies like Chips, right? Or Ghostbusters. Like, oh, man, they're killing us. No, make better movies. There's just enough information out there now for people to get a better feel for things and not risk wasting their money. You want to circumvent that? Make something worth watching. That it's that simple.
Get here.
All right. Next week, we will be taking a break. Like I said, we are not watching. We are not going to review The Mummy. Instead, we're going to have a TV party here in this time slot, and we're going to look at Flash Season 3, subtitled Flashpoint. The night before on source material, we'll be looking at the actual source material for Flashpoint, the Flashpoint limited series. this week on the Metal Hammer of Doom, we're reviewing the new Dream Evil. The album's entitled Six, and I confirmed it with Sean on trial. We'll return this week with Superman Returns. Next week,
yay.
I will not be on the Metal Hammer of Doom. I will be at a concert, but the boys will still be doing their thing. They're going to look at Unleash the Archers. And on June 15th, Sean and I will be having a TV party tonight for Orange is the New Black Season 5. And that's all
really?
I got for now.
They got to 5?
It's been renewed for like 5, 6, and 7, I think.
Sorry, I stopped watching halfway through season 2 because it got boring and repetitive. I can't imagine what you're having to put up with.
they left it in an interesting place last season. The women had sort of rioted and taken over the prison, and they left it with one of them finding
riots. That's an everyday.
In any case,
sorry. It's a minimum security facility, right? I seem to recall this.
Why don't you watch it and you'll understand what's happening?
I don't care enough to watch.
Then stop commenting and let me get through my damn plugs. Actually, I said that's all I got for now. So what do you got going on, sir?
So I timed that perfectly and you squashed my point. All right. again, we're off next week. We'll be back the week after with Cars 3, I seem to recall.
Yes, that is correct.
Wherein, I anticipate crapping on this one. Let me just phrase it like that. I have not cared for this franchise, and initial trailers for this movie had me thinking, oh, this might not actually suck. But no... No, now you're just turning it into another Rocky, so it's probably going to suck. So we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks. Thanks to everyone who read my live coverage of UFC 212, those who read it after the fact as well, much appreciated. Those who listened to the 411 Ground and Pound radio show where we reviewed UFC 212, previewed UFC Fight Night 110. Ugh. I'm not in a good spot, guys. I am not in a good spot. Because there's Fight Night 110 with one fight worth watching. It's not the main event. Then the event after that is Fight Night 111 with no fights worth watching. Maybe Safadine and RDA, maybe. Your mileage will vary there, but apart from that, the rest of that card, no. And there's Fight Night 112, which is a great main event. That's about all I can say there. Michael Chiesa versus Kevin Lee should be great. I'm not interested in Tim Boach versus Johnny Hendricks, which is the co-main event, and it's all downhill from there. There's a few other fights on that card that might not suck, but I'm not looking forward to them. So again, rough spot. So thanks to everyone who stops by and, you know, comments. I use you guys in my downtime to help keep myself amused, to both read and comment when I can. So thanks to everyone who follows along. Always appreciated. This Sunday, we'll be reviewing, again, Fight Night 110, previewing Fight Night 111. And I will desperately, desperately try to find some form of enthusiasm. I'll spoil this, though. It ain't going to happen. All right. I think that's everything.
All righty. Well, thank you for joining us here on Damn You Hollywood. We'll be back in 2 weeks for Robert Winfrey. I am your mandated reporter, and I'm so tired.
Frankly, look, I will take over the frankly mortified at your attempted outro. Will that work?
Thank you. Go ahead.
Anyway, he's Mark. You're not. I'm Robert, and be grateful you're not. Until next time, thank you again for tuning in, everybody. Always appreciated. Thanks for sharing us our work if you enjoy it. A lot of love to you guys. Again, many thanks. Mark and I just do this because we enjoy it, and we appreciate that there's people out there who listen and get some semblance of enjoyment out of it as well. Always appreciated. Thank you. Until next time, please continue to be well, be safe, and behave.